Yes, about 8 feet under the earth, earth being the dirt where I am right now. Richard Lawrence, our special guest. We'll be back with him with more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Richard Lawrence, our special guest tonight. Richard, was it just primarily nuclear problems and catastrophes that the ETs contacted Dr. George King with?
No, it wasn't just that at all. They were talking about a major change. They were talking about a cosmic plan and a major change that's coming about in the near future. And, of course, this aligns with some of the other prophecies of the time we're living in, and that the Earth is going into what one could call a new age, although that term has been abused by some people. But, nevertheless, a new age will dawn, is starting to dawn in our world. And they were preparing humanity for this great change. It's a change which is coming about to the planet herself, the Mother Earth, as I mentioned earlier, as a living being. And there are things that we can all do to prepare ourselves. I mean, they never talked about a one and only way or there's just one path to enlightenment. There are various paths, but the big message that they gave, the overriding priority now, is service to others. As opposed to just personal development. And these are some of the messages they gave. For example, there's a wonderful, wonderful practice that I love myself very much indeed called the 12 Blessings. Now, this was delivered, and this is a bit controversial, but nevertheless, it was delivered by the Master Jesus through Dr. King in 1958. And it's not so much a teaching, although it is that, but it's even more a practice. It's something people can do to make a difference to the world, and it will also and does really change the life of the person who does it as well for the good. So it's a combined effort, if you like, of spiritual service to others to save the planet, prepare for this new age, and also it brings about your own enlightenment and great peace within.
Are they almost like updated commandments?
That's a very interesting question, actually. They're not really updated commandments so much as, if you could say, they're closer to a continuation of the Sermon on the Mount. They're blessings to various focal points. For example, the first one is, blessed are they who work for peace. That's all people in the world, no matter in what way they're doing it, whether they're trying to negotiate peace in the Middle East or whether they're working in the Darfur region to bring peace, whatever their religion or no religion, if they're working for peace, they form a group soul. So the first blessing goes out to that group soul and empowers them in their work for peace. And then it goes through 11 other focal points, the wise ones, they who serve, blessed are they who love, I mean, and so forth. And then it becomes more cosmic as it goes to the planet herself, the Mother Earth, the sun, and then even out beyond that into the great beings throughout the universe. And, of course, the other principle behind this is the age-old principle of karma, that what goes around comes around. So as you send energy out, so you receive it back, and this empowers your life as well.
Are other people to date receiving contacts from these same ETs?
There have been individuals on this planet. I mean, I imagine you must have covered the Ascended Masters, have you, George, from
yes.
time to time?
Yes, we've done that.
Right. And so there are beings like that, mostly ones who work behind the scenes, who do have contacts and communication with these intelligences. But Dr. King's particular role, at this time in our history anyway, was to be public with it and it was very, very difficult, as we discussed earlier, especially when he started in the 50s, to get anybody to report it at all accurately. And actually, I did want to take this opportunity to really compliment you, George. I mean, it's so rare to have an opportunity like this to put over concepts in an unadulterated manner through the media. And I think you're doing fantastic things with your program. It's really wonderful. But so often, you don't get it out in a proper manner, or you get bogged down in lengthy scientific debate and never get past the first point. But with Dr. King, his role was really to spread their teaching. So I'd have to say that he had a unique role with these beings.
Well, you know, and like Dr. King, we had Art Bell, who started this concept for us many years ago,
exactly.
Richard. I merely have taken the torch, and I'm trying to run up the hill with it.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. I mean, you're known. I bumped into somebody the other day. I'm appearing on another station in London, actually, called Smooth Radio, starting next month, as their paranormal expert.
Excellent.
I was talking to one of the controllers there, and he downloads your show every day in London, gets it on his mobile, listens to it in the train or in the car. You know, you've got a massive fan base, as I'm sure you know, the world over.
Well, people want answers, and they want the truth, and they want to find out what's going on. And though some of this could be entertainment in some of the kinds of shows we've done, by and large, people want to think, and there are millions of people now all around this planet who are just trying to get a better understanding, Richard, why they're here, where they're headed, and what's going on this planet.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we found in the Aetherius Society. I've been very lucky because I've been able to travel around the world, as you mentioned earlier, for the Aetherius Society, and met members and sympathizers in New Zealand, in Australia, in Africa, you know, throughout America as well as Europe. And I found that the sort of people who are searching for truth, it's not necessarily about intellectual background. It's certainly not about racial background or social background. It's this burning desire to get to the truth, no matter what it is. And they're people who can't, and I'm sure this applies to people, you know, that you listen to your program. They're people who can't just dismiss something because it sounds unlikely, because so many things that sounded unlikely have been fantastically true. And when you really think about it, they are likely. I mean, we've been celebrating over here, you know, the abolition of the slave trade a couple of hundred years ago.
Sure.
And what's extraordinary is that at that time, for someone to go out and say, well, slavery is wrong, was regarded as outrageous and regarded as eccentric, and nobody could understand why they would want to do it. And now, anyone who was in favor of slavery would be regarded as abominable. And I think it's going to be even more so with the sort of things you and I are talking about. I mean, we've already seen a shift in the last 25, 30 years. In a few decades, everybody's going to believe in inhabited life. Well, a planet was discovered yesterday. I don't know whether you covered that.
Oh, yeah, we sure did.
Okay.
We blanketed that one.
All right. Well, I won't bore your listeners again, but, I mean, at the time, people would say there's no inhabited planets out there at all, and now we've just discovered one, in astronomical terms, just down the road.
That has that possibility.
And, yeah.
The quest to find life out there in the universe is something that has pushed mankind, I think, since our beginning. And the fact that it's coming here, it's been coming here, and that we may be who they are is fascinating all by itself, Richard.
And the other thing people tend to do, I think it's a big mistake, is to judge aliens by ourselves. So they'll say something like, I always get asked whenever I'm giving a lecture, you know, well, if they existed, why don't they land openly and prove themselves, in the Hollywood Bowl or Hyde Park, London, or somewhere like that? And then people will go on even further and say, well, if they existed, they would land openly, they would prove themselves. And this is a big, big mistake, because we're dealing with an alien intelligence. It's not for us to say what we think they would do. We have to look at what they do. And that is that they've been visiting us for thousands of years. I mean, the Hindu scripts are full of Vimanas, and I'm sure you cover that type of thing. I find it fascinating. The ancient Greek legends, the Celtic legends, some of the Native American indigenous tribes in Africa, etc., have reported this activity for thousands of years. It's going on now as never before. They're being filmed on video regularly nowadays, and yet they haven't chosen to force humanity to believe in them. So what is the cosmic plan? What are they engaged in? And we have to not try and say, well, that's what I think they would do. We have to say, what are they doing? And that's where Dr. George King, for example, is so valuable, because he can then answer those questions and say, look, this is their message. This is why they're here. And this is what you personally, every individual in the world, can do to cooperate with them if they wish to.
What kind of person was he as an individual?
He was extremely down-to-earth. He had a fantastic sense of humor. He was the opposite to what you might call flaky. He really was grounded and believed in carrying out the task he was given. He was completely committed to it. The contact came in 1954, as we call it, the command, when he was first contacted by the master Etherius, and he just stuck to it throughout the rest of his life for 24 hours a day. He was very, very hard working, very much led from the front. He wasn't a great lover of public appearances, although he did make many, but he didn't seek out the limelight of choice. He wrote many, many books, and I strongly recommend one, for example, I would recommend to listeners. If you just want to check us out, it's called The Nine Freedoms, a wonderful book well, it's my favorite book in the world, actually, of great spiritual teaching. And he just stuck to his guns, really, come what may. He had that sort of spirit that you associate with a pioneer, someone who just knew. He, of course, knew that it was true. He knew that he was getting it. He was a trained yogi, and he just stuck to it, really.
What was his belief, Richard, about divine intervention? What was, in the fact that there was a creator behind all of this?
Yes, he was a very, obviously, as one would expect, a very spiritual and indeed a religious man, and believed in God, but didn't wish to limit it to any one religion. There's this wonderful parable of Ramakrishna that the Hindu saint in the 19th century said, if you take eight boys and blindfold them, they'd never seen an elephant, and you took them into a shed where an elephant was kept, and each one of those boys could touch one part of that elephant, the tail, the trunk, the leg, and then you bring them out again and you ask for their eight descriptions, you'd get eight completely different descriptions, but the elephant would be the same. And he said that is true of the different religions. They've touched on different aspects of God. God isn't changed by religion. God is above and beyond it all. And Dr. King had this concept of the absolute, of a divine creator throughout the whole cosmos, and tremendous respect. He was a great lover of the Eastern traditions. He was a practitioner of the advanced forms of yoga himself as I mentioned earlier, for 10 years, but also tremendous respect for the Western religions too. So he's very broad-minded, but his mission was to bring a cosmic dimension to that. And where does it fit in the universe as a whole and with the coming new age? So he was extremely, extremely focused. And divine intervention, he said, was nearly at an end, hence the various missions that he introduced. And for example, he went to 18 mountains around the world, which were then charged with energy by these beings from other planets. Now, anybody can go to them. There are four in America, and do whatever spiritual practice they wish to do on them, actually, and energy will go out. So this is a way, if you like, of people cooperating with that divine intervention. But it is down to us, he said. We've got to stand on our own two feet. We can't just expect to be saved. We have to make an effort ourselves.
Is Mount Shasta one of them?
It isn't one of the mountains that he was involved in charging, but it was a mountain which he had tremendous respect for. He regarded it as a holy place and went there himself.
Would you happen to have the four here in the United States?
Yes, I would. Yes, there are two in California. One is Mount Baldy, and the other is Mount Talak. And then there's Castle Peak in Colorado and Mount Adams in New Hampshire. And we arrange pilgrimages to all those mountains from time to time. I would advise people to get onto the website. Some of them need mountaineering advice. They're not all an easy climb by any means. In fact, none of them is an easy climb. We're lucky in the UK, in Britain, we have some mountains which are much easier to climb. But we're always happy to give advice. If people want to call our free phone number, it's 1-800-800-1354. And as I stress, you don't have to be of any particular religion. You may not regard yourself as being religious at all, but you can send out spiritual energy into the world.
Now, when you say that he charged these mountains, tell me more about that.
Would climb the mountains, and this is a mission which was called Operation Starlight, and it lasted between 1958 and 1961. And he would actually physically go to 18. Actually, there was a 19th mountain, Mount Kilimanjaro, that was charged by an ascended master, not by him personally. But he would go to them. He had to enter an elevated samadhic state on them. And this is all part of the principle of every step we take towards them, they can take two towards us. They would then, the cosmic masters, and it would be a different master, depending which mountain it was, would put an initial charge through him into the mountain. And then, of course, it would be completely charged. And it can't be discharged by anyone. The energy is there. You can feel it. You can go there. And you can have a wonderful spiritual pilgrimage, if you like. The main purpose of it, though, I would stress, unlike some pilgrimages, is to serve the world. It's to go there, to send energy out to the world, to bring healing, to bring peace. But it will also, as a secondary thing, be a wonderful spiritual experience which will change your life.
Did he ever describe these beings in terms of their craft? I know originally it was a telepathic connection. He did see them. But was there ever a craft involved?
Yes, there was. There were, of course, particularly in the 50s when he was first starting out, George, there was the flying saucer. We don't hear much about that now. The disc-shaped craft. The George Adamski photograph, the early photograph. Which has sort of made it famous. And he definitely talked about those existing, and he had experiences. And then there were the motherships, which you referred to, which are more the cigar-shaped object. And he himself went to a craft I mentioned earlier called Satellite Number 3, out of body, and he described in detail, actually, in the Nine Freedoms, there's a wonderful description of the technology in that craft. As a matter of fact, we're doing some podcasts from our website at the moment about the Nine Freedoms. And I don't know whether they're going to cover this, but there's a very interesting description of that craft when he visited it. And it shows really the function. I mean, so many UFOs and let's say IFOs, identified flying objects, are really here to give some technological support to this planet of one kind or another in spiritual ways. And Satellite Number 3 is one of these, and it just beams down energy, but it can only do it when people on this world are engaged in service to others.
Richard, when we come back after the break, I want to ask you whether Dr. King was ever told the secrets of end times, Revelation.
Right.
And we'll get into that a little bit more. Next hour, okay. We'll open up the phone line so you can chat with Richard Lawrence. And give us your thoughts on ET contact. As a matter of fact, I would love it for those of you who believe that you are having some kind of telepathic ET contact to check in with us as well. The websites we've been talking about tonight, Richard Lawrence, LAWRENCE.co.uk. You can also go to the Aetherius.org website. Now, both of these websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. With Richard Lawrence. So make sure that you just go and peruse those and grab as much information as you can. I got to tell you, when I go back to Los Angeles, and I'll be back Monday, I'm going to definitely look up the Aetherius Society and go in and chat with them. And maybe if I'm lucky, maybe if I'm very, very lucky, I'll be able to see the radionic apparatus that Richard was talking about and take pictures of it. Nah, I don't think they'll let me. I'll be back. We're going to talk about end times with Richard Lawrence when we come back in the next hour. Your turn. Phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie along with Richard Lawrence. Richard, end times prophecy, of course, is something I've always been fascinating in. The book of Revelation, of course, at the end of the Bible.
Yeah.
Did these ETs ever talk with Dr. George King about end times or, you know, what could happen?
Yes, well, they said right from the beginning that we're at a very, very dangerous time in our history now, and that these are, if you like, the last days of the old order. And this brings us back to the discussion earlier about the dangers of nuclear experimentation, and that we're going into a new age. So it's all a question of how we go about it. There could be, there could easily, it's not over yet, but there could have been dire catastrophe by now and great destruction, not of the whole planet, but of parts of the human race. And the Aetherius Society is been working, one organization anyway, that's been working in cooperation with beings from other planets to try and make this as smooth a transition as possible. Now, allied with this is what has been called in the Bible and elsewhere a sorting of souls. We're great believers, along with so many others, of course, in reincarnation. And the fact that although there are a certain number of people physically alive, there are billions of others who are on other levels waiting to reincarnate. And in this period, we are choosing, really, as individuals, each one of us, whether we are going to go forward into this new age, whether we're going to cooperate with this great spiritual change which is taking place, or whether we are not. And then there'll be this sorting will take place, and those that go forward, those that work and cooperate with the change in numerous different ways, will inherit this new age. Those that don't will continue their evolution on another planet. This is not a punishment, but it's because they will not be ready, if you like, whoever they are, to sustain the very high elevated vibrations which are coming to and from the Mother Earth in the new age.
Why don't they dismantle all the nuclear weapons on this planet?
Very good question, and I'm sure they would dearly love to in one way, except it would do something I referred to earlier, which is rob us of the most valuable gift we have from the divine, if you like, and that is experience. It'd be the same question, really. Why doesn't a parent just do all their child's homework for them? All the answers would be correct. They'd get 100%, but they'd learn nothing. And we are here as individuals to learn through karma, through experience, through the cycle of reincarnation, to evolve. And so they will help us. They will help us to do that. They are helping us to do that. They're helping us to reduce the impact of radioactive release, such as in Chernobyl, which we're told could have led to millions of, it could have changed the shape of Europe. An earlier accident in Russia could have led to millions of deaths. So they will help, they'll cooperate, but they won't do it all for us. We have to do it. Otherwise, we've got nothing.
It could be a fatal mistake for us if they don't get involved.
Well, they are involved, but they can only go so far. This is the divine intervention we were talking about earlier. Intervention can go so far and no further. We will not be allowed, though, to destroy the whole planet. That will not happen. But they can't, or they won't, intervene so far that it defies karma, if you like. It defies the whole purpose of existence, which is to evolve and to learn and to gain experience.
It is fascinating that these UFO reports really started to heat up during the time we were experimenting with nuclear weaponry.
Absolutely, and very often over the sites or over the plants. I mean,
yes,
there have been many sightings over Chernobyl and other atomic plants as well, and nuclear installations and military installations.
One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes, Richard, was the one called To Serve Man. Do you remember that at all?
I didn't see that, no.
Okay, that was it started off. I can talk about it now because you know it's a number of years old. I'm not giving away any trade secrets, but it started with an individual who was in an alien spacecraft telling his story in a flashback, and he went on to explain that we had incredible problems on this planet. And there was a visitation from above by extraterrestrials. And they came and they said, we can help you do this and that and increase your crops and, you know, get you better energy. And they left behind a book while they were doing this. And it had, it was written in their tongue. So, you know, we were trying to decode it. And along the entire program, people, Earthlings, would take visitations and tours to this other planet. And, so you would see scenes of them getting on the ship, and the ships would take off by the hundreds. And finally, the person who was in the flashback in the ship when it started, we saw him boarding the ship to go up it, and all of a sudden somebody came running out. They had decoded the book that was left behind, and the book title was To Serve Man. It was a cookbook. They were harvesting humans to eat. And it was a great Twilight Zone show. I'll never forget it. It's one of my favorites. Rod Serling, the creator, always had a message behind it. In this particular case, what message did they leave with Dr. George King for us?
Well, not trying to sort of pinch your story there, which is fascinating, a bit of science fiction there, but it is to serve man. I mean, that is the real message, that we can all make a massive difference. I mean, one of the things the Aetherius Society is very involved in is healing, giving of healing, teaching of people to give healing. And there are so many healers that I've met over the years in America as well as in Europe who don't realize that although, yes, you can heal an individual, they think we can't make much of a difference in the world. We can't make much of a difference to a war zone or a terrible disease wave or something like that. And the big message that they give us is that we can. And we don't have to wait until we're highly advanced, adepts or initiates or whatever. We can do it now. We can send out energy, such as in the 12 blessings, which I mentioned earlier, or through another form of prayer or healing, and send it out to the world. Anyone can raise their hands, say a prayer from their heart to their God, visualize white light flowing out to a region of the world which needs healing and peace and freedom, and that visualization will make a difference, and it might make a far bigger difference than we think. That's just one example of ways that we can heal. We can climb up these mountains that I've mentioned. We can cooperate with satellite number 3. We can cooperate with other aspects of the Aetherius Society, or indeed in other ways. We've never said it's the one and only way. There are many ways that people can serve. So that's their real message. This is the greatest yoga, they say, the greatest religion, the greatest path in these days.
I've always wondered if these extraterrestrials, whoever they may be living among us at this present time. What do you think?
I certainly do believe that we have had aliens living among us through history. Perhaps not as many as some people think. They are extremely unusual individuals. I do believe, as I said earlier, that beings like Jesus, Buddha, Sri Krishna, and some of those do have, I mean, the Star of Bethlehem being the most famous, UFO activity associated with them. There are undoubtedly, I believe, aliens who've lived among us in a much more secret way, who haven't reveal their identities. But again, it's divine intervention and how much of that is allowable. I mean, we've been told about 3 adepts, as they've been referred to, who have lived in our world and have helped to fight spiritual battles on our behalf. So these things have been going on behind the scenes, because although we talked earlier about hostile elements from outside of this world, there are definitely hostile elements on this planet, as well as very benign ones, such as the Ascended Masters. And there is a bit of a spiritual conflict going on this world, a lot of it unnoticed by human beings. And this battle has been entered by, I do believe, alien beings living in ordinary Earth physical bodies on our behalf. And there are undoubtedly some alien beings working either on this level or higher levels to help us. But it's not sort of the numbers that some organizations put out. I don't think there are thousands and thousands of them.
And they may not be our neighbors.
They may certainly not be our neighbors, no. And a lot of the... We were talking earlier about alien abductions, and I've looked into that a bit when I've done paranormal broadcasts and so forth. And I do believe quite a few of those cases, often associated with people being in a deep sleep or almost like a dream state or
sure.
having what seems to be an out-of-body experience, have been with entities from this world, not from alien entities. And then a lot of that's been going on for, that have been called gremlins or ghouls or, you know, the medieval bishops talked about devils and so on. There's been a lot of that kind of thing going on, and it's from this world. There's a tendency now to sort of put everything as being alien, and it isn't all alien by any means.
I've always wondered if the Irish myths and folklore of leprechauns might have been little extraterrestrials.
Well, yes, it's interesting. I mean, I'm also a believer in devic forces, and we talk about this in the Aetherius Society. In other words, fairies, angelic creep beings, and those who are involved in waters and in the mountains, in controlling nature, if you like, and dealing with the energies of to do with weather and to do with the natural forces of the planet. And I do think leprechauns and some of the little people, as they're called in Ireland, have been those kind of devic forces, again, from this earth.
You brought up angelic. Is it possible that angelic intervention, and I do believe that occurs,
yes,
might have been confused with extraterrestrial intervention and vice versa?
Certainly. I mean, angels is a word, isn't it, now, that is used to cover an enormous range of contact with higher life forms. Anything from what you might have one time called a spirit guide,
mm-hmm.
someone who's died, I've had many contacts like that myself. And when it gets to the more elevated level, though, you're talking about an angel Gabriel or things like this where there's been actual intervention, it could indeed be an extraterrestrial being. Some of the gods of ancient Greece could have been, before the stories got, you know, mishandled and distorted, could have been great and elevated beings. I mean, Catullus, the Roman poet, refers to a time when mortals mixed with the gods, and the gods came from cosmic realms. And this has been with us through the centuries in Buddhism, the lokas, the higher spheres, in the Hindu realms. And often the angelic word is used, the angelic kind of description. So one would have to look at every case, I think. But certainly some angels, or guardian angels, are more spirit guides, people who've died and are just looking over you. They're ordinary people who love you and who have died and are just caring for you.
Well, whatever is out there in the universe, Richard, it is truly, I think, marvelous. And if we are being visited, you know, it could be, again, one of the wonders of the world.
It's the most exciting thing. I mean, it's been a real privilege for me to be involved in the Aetherius Society, to be the secretary over here in Europe, and Brian Kniep is our secretary in America. And it's been a real privilege to be engaged in cooperating directly with beings from other planets. And, you know, I must say I'm at the stage now where I've had so many experiences of doing this that I can't really call it a belief anymore. It's something I've experienced and know happens and goes on. It's as real or more real than some of our ordinary experiences in life. It's a very tangible thing. I would advise people who are looking into this to keep their feet firmly on the ground, though. Don't take my word for anything I say. I mean, I invite you to investigate the things I'm saying. I don't expect you to believe it just because you've heard me say it. But you will find, though, the good news, and I agree with you, it's wonderful news, is that if you do look into this and if you do test it in your life, you will get the proof you're looking for.
Richard, when I was a boy, I'd go outside in Michigan on a cold night. Stars would be very bright and brilliant against the black sky, and I would always try to will a UFO to come by. And never happened. I've never seen one yet.
Really?
But I'm convinced that I might have been on to something. I think you can summon them that way, can't you?
Well, some people say so. I wouldn't want to be dogmatic there. Because you can't, I mean, it's up to them and not up to us, really. But what I would say, I mean, you are doing something far more important for UFOs, I would say, than seeing them, because you are enabling people such as myself to put over the case for their existence. And this is, you are cooperating, I would say, cooperating directly with them by allowing these voices to be heard. And, of course, Michigan. It's funny, I didn't know you were from Michigan.
But yeah, I was born in Detroit.
Yeah, because I had a very pleasant trip up there a few years ago. We have a wonderful branch there, actually, of people who've been involved in this for many years. So anyone from that area. We have actually groups around the USA and Canada, such as Toronto and elsewhere. Do get in touch, because you don't have to see a UFO, though, to believe in them, do you, George?
No, not at all.
I mean, most of us haven't actually met some of the, pygmy or an aborigine or some of the civilizations that have a proud tradition on this world, but we know they're there. We don't doubt it. It isn't essential. But also, I suppose you've been in radio studios at night a lot of your life, haven't you?
I sure
have. So you're not going to see them so easily.
I don't have time. So true. Hey, how many members in the Aetherius Society worldwide?
We don't have an exact figure, but what we say is we're not an enormous organization. We certainly have thousands around the world. We have many others, though, who are interested in us, because our members are complete believers. So we have, I don't have the figures for America, but for example, in England, we have a mailing list of something in the region of 15,000 to 20,000 people who've come to us who wish to be kept informed of our activities and our beliefs. But we don't call all of those members. The members are people who absolutely believe in the 9 freedoms, the 12 blessings, and every other aspect of our work. We're very big, for example, in Nigeria and in Ghana, and we can't even sort of keep membership records in parts of those countries because of the problems of currency and communication and so on.
Did anybody in your membership ever investigate the Dogon tribe that knows all about the Sirius star system?
I can't say we've investigated. I've heard of it. I'm familiar with the name, but no, we haven't done an investigation. But from what I've heard, have you covered that on the show?
Yes, Robert Temple wrote a book on it called The Sirius Mystery.
Yes,
and it is just a remarkable story. Absolutely
incredible.
Remarkable. Yep.
Is that tied in? That's not tied in, actually. No, it's Orion that's tied into the pyramids of Giza.
That's tied into the pyramids, right.
Yeah.
Graham Hancock's theory is that
the
belt is identical to the three major pyramids
terms
of their layout.
Yes,
I mean, it's just this entire planet, Richard, is fascinating. The things that have happened.
It certainly is. Yes, I mean, there's really no excuse for boredom. I mean, there is so much fascinating, so many fascinating areas to look into. And in this particular field, the paranormal, you might loosely call it, you find as you go into it, at least I do, that it's really very normal. It's quite natural, and it's disbelief in some of these things, which is a bit abnormal at times, because there's so much evidence and such a tradition. What I found fascinating, actually, is that similar conclusions have been reached in different cultures, in history, in different geographical locations, who've had no connection with each other at all. For example, I'm working at the moment on a book which is related to channeling, called God's Guides and Guardian
Let's
Angels.
Let's talk about that when we come back, channeling and how that works. And, of course, we'll open up the phone lines next. Questions for our guest, Richard Lawrence, right here on Coast to Coast AM.